This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Well, I don't know what all you expect out of this session. Verna and I have been in ministry, as he mentioned. I went to Northwestern Ontario in 1965, drafted. I should have been in Vietnam, but MCC had an opportunity to be involved in missions. I tell people I carried this weapon instead of destructive weapons. So it's been a privilege to have served in that region. And you can read the first paragraph in your handout here, giving you a bit of an overview of what I would like to cover in the 45 minutes. I may open it for some feedback, some time to reflect on what you've heard or what your experience has been or your interest in a career. You know, the 5-year-old, the 10-year-old, we dream, right? What did you dream of as a child? What were your childhood dreams or calling? And, you know, a 5-year-old, a 4-year-old frequently will say, I want to do what my daddy does. Whether it's farming or truck driving or whatever your daddy does. And I've had Verna is sitting here with us this afternoon. We've raised 5 children on the mission field. Oldest one is a daughter, youngest one's a daughter, and 3 sons. And maybe I'll tell a few stories about that. About them as we go through this presentation. So back to the childhood dreams. I don't know exactly what I dreamed early on. However, I was profoundly influenced by a Bible class teacher that came to our public school. I mean, this is in the 50s and 60s, right? Before private schools were even, there were very seldom, there was very few private schools. One hour a week from grades 2 to grade 6. And by the time I was 10, I knew what it meant to be a Christian growing up in an Amish home. My name gives me away, right? If you know anything about Lancaster County, you know that my name describes who I am. I was Amish until I was 18. But at 10 years old, I knew what it meant to be a believer. Parents influenced by the Brunk revivals in the 40s and in the early 50s. Of course, I was too young to get involved in the Brunk revivals, but I had relatives, uncles, aunties that were profoundly influenced, started some of the Mennonite churches in the east of Lancaster County, southeast of Maple Grove, Sandy Hill. All those kind of churches were a spring out of some of those massive revivals, including some of my relatives. Somewhere along the way, too, I became an evangelist to my sister. I grew up in a family of 5, sister, a brother, a sister, me, and a sister. So early on, I'd go home and we'd color these coloring books with pictures of Bible characters, and we would cut them out and find some, steal some, ask mom for some material to flannel graph or something to put on the, stick on the back, glue on the back of these figures we were cutting out, and I proceeded to teach what I learned in school to my sister. So I'm saying this morning or this afternoon, what have you done as a kid? What touched you? What motivated you? What is childhood callings? The call. What was there that touched you? I'm saying what touched me. Early on, I became a missionary to my little sister, and 3 years younger than me. And amazingly, when at 18, I made an open profession of faith. Asked my parents one day if they minded if I went to another church. I'd been with the Wild and Wicked Amish Youth from 16 to 18. I knew I couldn't keep there. I couldn't keep on going there. And all during those years, I'm still reading my Bible and praying. In fact, I got caught one morning praying in the barn on a bale of hay. And a rat runs across my hands. That rat was in trouble because this Amish boy had a dog, too. And when he smelled rat, he wouldn't quit. So I'm digging up hay bales, and he eventually got the rat. So I remind people, you better watch it. Your prayers might stir up rats. But make sure you have a dog to catch them. So, what are your childhood dreams? At 18, making that open profession, asking my parents, my father told me, you know, it's not the way we'd like to see. We'd like you to stay in the church we're in, but it's not the way we'd like to see it, but I'm not going to say no. So I did. I started attending Weavertown Church here in Lancaster County. And you say, well, how come you're still not in that Weavertown Church? Well, we got involved in Mennonite missions in northwestern Ontario when I was 20. Drafted, as I already referred to, and spent 2 years doing my BS, 1W service in the backwoods of northwestern Ontario. The call, what has been your call? What stirs within your bosom, within your heart, about the passion for ministry? I'd like to refer to two calls, Moses and Isaiah. And if you happen to have a Bible, busy walking around different sessions, most people don't carry Bibles. But if you have one, Exodus chapter 3 and 4 gives a bit of an overview of the call of Moses. Now, maybe you're like Moses was. The first 20 years, he thought he was somebody, educated quite well, and the top educational system of the world at that time, right? Egypt. So in our setting, you may be educated. What's some of the great institutions of our land? Oxford. You may have gone for top education, and you feel a call, you sense a call. So Moses is out there grabbing life by the tail, as it were, and doing something about what he feels called to, delivering his people. And it got him in trouble, right? And so he runs. Frequently, we run. Sometimes when we get too excited about our childhood calls, or we find ways to do exactly like Moses did. 40 years thinking he was somebody, 40 years in the backside of a desert, and 40 years of being useful for God, is what I heard some people say about Moses. I'd like to refer to a few quotes of Moses and a few things that God said here in the call. Exodus chapter 3, verse 3. So Moses said, "I must turn aside now and see this marvelous sight. Why the bush is not burned up." You know, our call to Christianity, we're drawn to marvelous sights. And, of course, God tells him to take off his shoes. He's standing on holy ground. And then in verse 6, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob." And Moses became frightened. And God said, "I am aware of the sufferings of your people." In verse 7. Now Moses had run away from his people, right? He's in the desert. Verse 11, "Who am I?" You know, in our calls, sometimes we think we're going to do it. Next time we say, "Who am I? How would I ever accomplish anything like that?" God confirms in verse 12 that they're going to worship. He's going to bring the 600,000 people and have them worship where Moses is standing today with his shoes off. Amazing. And then in chapter 4, verse 2, "What's that in your hand?" You know, when we're called, we frequently ask in faith builders, what is it? You'll see some of their slogans. What's in your hands? What's in your three H's? What's in your head? What's in your hands? What's in your heart? Heads. What's in your head, your heart, and your hands? God says, "What is that in your hand?" in verse 2. And it mentions hands here in verse 6, 7. Put your hand, there's this illustration. Verse 10, Moses begins to make excuses. "I've never been eloquent. I'm not a good speaker. I speak Pennsylvania Deutsch. Or I can't go to a foreign land because my speech will give me away. And I just can't do it, Lord." That's what he finally said. In verse 12, "Now then go and I will," God said, I will be with your mouth and teach you what to say. And Moses said, "Please, Lord, now send a message by whomever you will, but send somebody else, Lord." And in verse 14, God gets angry. Do your excuses, do my excuses sometimes get God quite angry? Quite a story here. And we know that Moses finally went and all the things he accomplished. In verse 31 in chapter 4, "So the people believed, and when they heard that the Lord was concerned about the sons of Israel and that he had seen their affliction, then they bowed low and worshipped." So, thank the Lord. There was some people given to paying attention and believing. They bowed low and worshipped. The other one is Isaiah. And there's five words here in Isaiah chapter 6. Isaiah got a glimpse, you and I, as if we're going to have a lifetime career, we need a calling. We need something that will shake and move us. Five words in this chapter 6. The one word I hear after Isaiah saw all these things in verse chapter 6, verse 5, there's the word woe. Woe is me. I'm ruined. I'm a filthy guy with using filthy words. I'm an unclean man. I live among a people of unclean lips. But my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. If you're saying, what translation are you using? It's the NASB, New American Standard. Anyway, the Lord of hosts referred to, I think King James refers to it as, does anybody have a King James here?
Which verse again?
Verse
3 of 6?
Yes.
And one cried unto another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory.
King James uses the same phrase, though. The Lord of hosts is the captain of the armies of heaven. And if you put that in the context of what we heard Collier Burkshardt mention this morning, the captain of the armies of heaven is Jesus, our Lord Jesus Christ. So he got a glimpse of the Lord of hosts. The other thing we see here, there's the word woe. There is the word lo in the King James, and my translation it says behold in verse 7. Woe, lo, two words. We need a cleanup. We need a touch of the Almighty on our lips and our lives. And then the word go. Verse 8, then I heard a voice of the Lord saying, whom shall I send and who will go? And in verse 9, where whom shall I send? Who will go for us? Then I said, Isaiah said, here am I, send me. And we sing the song, right? Here am I, send me. So the call. Woe, lo, go. The last two words is in verse 11. Phrase there, Lord, how long? I call this the woe, the lo, the go, and how long. How long do you expect me to do this, Jesus? Lord, I don't know if I can handle this. This is overwhelming. God, I can't handle this. This is too confusing. You get in the backwoods of northwestern Ontario, and you'll say, take me back to where there's McDonald's. Just let me off the hook, Lord. I can't take this. Or if you're overseas, many of the places of ministry that you've seen today or yesterday. How long? And, Isaiah had quite a challenge there. How long? Next part here, the call of charting your life on paper at any age and stage. My encouragement to us today is that put your life on paper. I've done this through what I call a life chart with our children and myself. Find a way to put yourself on paper. Maybe I won't scribble it up here. Maybe I will. So You could potentially live to 70 by reason of strength 80, but many today are reaching 90s, right? I started in missions in 1965, 20 years old in northwestern Ontario, at 20 years old, and in 2017, how old does that make me? Any math students? 67. 20 years old in 1965. This is 2017. It's 72. So chart your life. What do you want to do with your life?
44 or 45?
I was born in 45. The end of the baby boomers, right?
No, beginning.
The beginning. Anyway, chart your life. Chart your life on paper. Verna and I are actually still charting our lives at 72. I got a plan here that went from age 59 in December of 2003, and I got a chart of life here with December of 2026, with question marks, obviously, the Lord willing. Will we ever retire? Most likely you have to retire because your body wears out. As you know, the 80 years old and the 90 years old grandparents, great-grandparents, you might know, they eventually have to stop. I mean, they can't keep going. So what's your vision? Is it a lifetime career? Is it a calling? And I'm giving you lots of personal stories. Any feedback on this context of the call? Anything you want to say about something you're learning about the call? If not, let's move to the second one here, the task. There's biblical examples of Jesus. I'm amazed as I read through the Gospels. You say, why didn't somebody put all the Gospels together in one volume, one writing, instead of four? But do you know, in Matthew we see Jesus as a king. In Mark we see him as a servant, suffering servant. In Luke we see him as a human. Luke wrote frequently about the Son of Man, his humanness. In John, we see Jesus as God. King, servant, human, God. Four writers giving us the life story of Jesus. In Luke chapter 4, we won't read a lot of this, but I like to refer to it. Luke chapter 4 is Jesus putting together his call. Now, Luke also records that at age 12, where was Jesus at age 12 where he got lost? I mean, his parents thought he was lost. Where was he? In the temple doing his father's business. So that's what I'm saying. Childhood calls, don't negate them. Don't find ways to diminish what you've sensed or felt in your calling as a child. Find a way to nurture that. Go to your uncle, your relatives, your grandma, your grandpa, or your parents, son, or pastor of a church, and say, you know what? I've dreamed and thought and think, and when I wake up, you know, we all center our lives around something, right? Teenagers often center their lives around education, work, money, cars, nursing. You know, you center your life around something. But go to somebody in your circles, in your people that have influenced your lives, and say, this is what I feel. I had a school teacher in grade 7 that influenced my life profoundly. I think he saw me as a wounded boy, a son in grade 7, and he drew me out. He took me hunting. He took me for a Saturday noon meal. Now, how many school teachers in public school would do that kind of thing? In fact, some school teachers that draw out those kind of boys, you think they're doing it for perverted reasons today. But he certainly didn't. He didn't mistreat me at all. In fact, he made me feel like I was important. He valued me with profound human dignity. And thank God today for someone. So go to somebody and say, ask the question. Explain what your childhood calls may have been like. The task. Jesus said in Luke chapter 4, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, when he opened the book of Isaiah. And Paul described his call in the book of Acts in a couple of verses when he was talking to Agrippa and, was it Felix? Saul, Saul, when he met Jesus on the Damascus Road, why are you persecuting me? It's hard for you to kick against the goats. And his question was, who are you, Lord? Have you asked that kind of question? You open your Bible and say, I don't understand this. I'm hearing about the God of my mom and dad and the God of my ancestors and the God of, but who are you, Lord? Have you asked that kind of question? And Jesus answered and said, I am Jesus whom you're persecuting, but get up. But, get up. Some of us need goats, something to get us getting up. Many people twiddle their lives away saying, I never had opportunity. Folks, today and in this conference, you have all kinds of opportunities for missions that I didn't have at age 20. Back in 1965, in fact, I was almost had decided that I was going to Faith Mission Home. They were just starting the home. And I tried to phone the, I can't think of the guy's name right now, who started Faith Mission.
Sanford Yoder.
And I was trying to phone him. Somehow the operator finally told them there's no such place on the map in Virginia. So I proceeded to find some friends and got me in touch with the missions center in northwestern Ontario, which was then Northern Light Gospel Mission, today known as Living Hope Native Ministries. And the draft board had said, you find a place to go in 30 days or we'll send you somewhere. So I found a place to go in 30 days, northwestern Ontario. Riding on an old milk truck loaded with canned goods and all kinds of things, there were four of us traveling in that milk truck. One of us had to ride in the back. This is October. And on top of everything, the side door, you know, we put a stepladder up there for the guy to crawl in there. And, you know, that's how I got to northwestern Ontario. Not always riding up there, but got stuck on the Red Lake Road. Never been there. This is adventure, right? Just like some of you saying, I've been to third world countries, and what an excitement. What an adventure. Well, I had my excitement and adventure sent off by my home church, the youth group. You know, they're all excited about sending off missionaries, and they make you feel like you're some kind of a extraordinary person. Got to Red Lake on a Saturday night, went to church on Sunday. Monday morning, this is October weather, the snow is starting to fly already up there, and it's the end of October. I was picking up rocks and pushing a wheelbarrow. Quite a send-off, right? Quite an egotistical drop-off, because this is missionary work. picking up rocks in snow flying weather, and I'm moving rocks from one pile to mission headquarters. They were trying to keep the water from running in the basement, so I'm moving rocks so they could get things covered up before the snow really flies and before we get our minus 40 temperatures. That's missionary work, right? Send off. So what's your call? Back to what the call was for Paul. Get up. Get up. Stand on your feet. In verse 16 in Acts 26, get up, stand on your feet. For this purpose I have appeared to you, to appoint you a minister and a witness, not only to the things which you have seen, but also to the things which I will appear to you, rescuing you from the Jewish people and from the Gentiles to whom I am sending you. I am sending you. You notice that? Who's sending who? Who sent Moses? Who sent Jesus? I am sending you to open their eyes that they may turn from darkness to light and from the dominion of Satan to God, that they may receive forgiveness of sins and an inheritance among those who have been sanctified by faith in me. And in verse 19, so King Agrippa, I did not prove disobedient to the heavenly vision. Thank God that has possibilities. You say, as a youth, there's a young person here this afternoon, I don't know if I could pull that off. Well, I stand here as a 52-year veteran in the backwoods of northwestern Ontario. God has proved, and it's been exciting to not be disobedient to the heavenly vision. Now, we got about 12 minutes to finish 3 and 4 in the back of your paper. Family considerations, third culture children. I got third culture grandchildren already, right? They're globetrotting all over the world. Hong Kong, smuggling Bibles. I got a grandson that's volunteering to go to Mexico in May for 2 years with the DNI. Third culture globetrotters. Involving the family in ministry. One exciting thing that has happened to us is we've been able to involve our children in ministry at Beaver Lake Camp, becoming camp counselors. Now, we have had challenges too. Two of our children we know of that have been sexually molested through our ministry efforts by the people we're attempting to minister to. So it's not hunky-dory. This isn't a pie-in-the-sky ministry. Our oldest daughter got molested by one of our staff who happened to be an Aboriginal person. And amazingly, she came back, and the incident happened, when she arrived home, she talked. And of course, we got on and began to talk too, to the perpetrator. So things happen. Involving our family in ministry doesn't shelter them from your normal routines of any and everyday life. We have to live by priorities. And number 4, is it sustainable? Well, the relationships with coworkers and your own health and your own aging and energy. One way that we have survived a career in missions is to take clear sabbaticals every 7 years taking time off, a full year. Now, what happens when we leave Northwestern Ontario, when we took our first sabbatical, guess what happened? Some other mission agency or some church says, well, you should stay here. You should do this. You should go join this mission. You have to be committed to the... In fact, we started saying that to our staff, if you want to go on a sabbatical, you have to come back for at least 1 year. You can't terminate while you're on a sabbatical. Because everybody is trying to grab those people. So we've done sabbaticals. The other thing you'll notice there is motivational development. Find a way to go back to school if you wish. You say, I got a taste of missions and now I'm seeing what I really need. I went back to school. As an Amish boy, I dropped out of school at grade 8, right? So you finish grade 8 and go to this one day a week school until you turn 15 and then you're done. Did that. I went back to school in my 20s back in Northwestern Ontario to a community college and I did some upgrading. Well, in my 40s, we began to realize that if we're going to have the tools we need, you know, was it Collier that said this morning or somebody said that, you know, if everybody thinks that they can solve all the problems with a hammer only, you're always looking for a nail. Anyway, some of us in the 80s, and I'm in my 40s in missions, family is growing. Some of us decided that if we're going to stay on the cutting edge of the needs of the Aboriginal people in our region, I mean, there's suicide, there's alcohol, there's drug addictions, there's all this family breakup and all the chaos. Many of our Aboriginal communities go from one trauma, one tragedy to another. It's almost like a constant crisis, living in the edge of crisis constantly. And some of us said, we need more trained and qualified people, and if we don't find them, we're going to be in trouble as a mission agency. And of course, to find the qualified people from our settings, and this is an encouragement to you, if you say, boy, I'd really like to get some training in a certain field. Motivational development. And so I had a pastor friend at that time who was a psychiatrist, but to get him out of his pastoral role to the backwoods of Northwestern Ontario, impossible, right? Because he had big school debts. Thousands of dollars, because a psychiatry is basically a social work, it's a psychologist degree, and then your medical degree on top of it. So you're talking about 8 to 15 years of education. So some of us went back to school. And I went back to school in 1985. Got a taste of what it means to get a master's degree, and well, I was struggling enough in it, they said go back and get your bachelor's degree. So in one of those sabbaticals in 92 to 94, I went back to University of Waterloo and got a bachelor's degree, and later got a master's degree. So find a motivational development. We got 5 minutes. One thing that happened too, at age 16, I dreamed about being a psychologist. You say, well, wait a minute, Amish boy dreaming about being a psychologist. How crazy can you get? One reason it happened, I worked for a farmer, a neighbor farmer, an English farmer. So it wasn't, and they listened to the radio while they're milking cows in the morning, and guess who they'd be listening to? Clyde Naramore. So I dreamed about being a psychologist. Now, at 16, I also was contemplating suicide. Now you say, wait a minute, what a chaotic lifestyle you come from. Sexually molested by an older brother, in these extremes were there. And my motivational development for education came back. The last statement there, continuing education or career-specific training. That's how you survive a lifetime career in missions. You know, 10 years into missionary work in northwestern Ontario, I got a glimpse of senior missionaries that are burnt out, senior missionaries that are sitting on their hunches and they just hate the people. They can't stand the people. If you sit down in their living rooms, they're always complaining about something or somebody. Can't get along with their co-workers. Folks, if you want a disaster, just join the mission. But thank God it doesn't have to end like that. And I declared somewhere along the way that I'm not going to end my life hating the people I'm attempting to serve. So, any response? We got about 3.5 minutes.
One thing that I'd like to say is...
you can stand up and talk to us. We give you permission.
I think the group's small enough. You can hear me from here. With involving the family, an interesting incident is that our oldest son, they're the only ones that live in Canada, but they are fostering 4 Native children. And 2 of those children... their grandmother was in our Sunday school in the community that we had lived in a number of years ago in Cripple Lake. And so it's just, that's an advantage of long-term missions too, is the continuity of relationships.
Any other comments?
I'd just like to add, I appreciate what you shared and the enthusiasm that you still have at your age. A lot of men your age are in Florida and they're pushing shovel sticks on the whatever. And it's a challenge for me, and I guess just like to share with the younger ones too. Often we think of missionaries as a preacher or linguistas or somebody with language and things we have to do. But I think God has gifted us in different areas with different gifts. And if we commit the gifts that God has given back to Him, He can use those very gifts to minister in different ways.
Amen.
I'm ordained deacon at our church, and they were calling us for a serving deacon, and I said, well, typically the deacons share messages, so I'm taking your time, but just, and I said, I haven't felt called to preach, but I felt called to serve, and our church has honored that and blessed me in my serving and released me to serve also with GTO and member care.
Right.
And there's great fulfillment in that. I'm challenged by men that can preach and teach and all the gifted men here that, but I'm not that. But I feel very privileged to walk. I guess find the spot that God's called you, and I think it's sustainable. It can be there until you're 70, 80 years
old. Exactly. It's like you do ministry out of overflow, not out of ministry. Oh, I've got to do this. Yeah. Drudgery. Oh, you've energized me even this afternoon. So, very well, time's up. Thank you.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.